get to build things very often, and the allure of building something like this for what it represents to the city and the community, that's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And so while it was a difficult decision to leave my practice and leave my clients and leave my firm, it was not hard to do. Now my wife would say something different about the machinations that went on and the gnashing of teeth, but I remember telling her that what I really wanted is to get the project, get the team up and running, be on the pitch that first day, that first game, wind blowing the lanyard, hopefully it's a warm day in March, and that would be kind of the capstone of that project and experience.
Good morning and welcome to a new edition of the City Voice podcast. I am joined by another very special guest. This time it's Jason Tyne, Chief Operating Officer of St. Louis City SC. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Peter, thank you very much.
It's been a long time coming, but you are officially, in my estimation, one of the most interesting people at the club. You don't have Chief Operating Officers on podcast. It just doesn't happen. So I feel like we must be the first MLS club to ever have a COO on the show. Jason, how are you doing, firstly?
Pete, I'm doing great. Thank you very much. And I appreciate you having me on to tell the story.
Yeah. So let's ask the first question. I normally start with how long have you been at the club? I've got to ask you, how long have you been on the project? Because you're a long-termer.
You're right. I was in some of the very first meetings back in second quarter of 2018. And while I was still in private practice as a lawyer here at a firm in St. Louis, and on January 6th in 2020, there were six of us that walked into the first office that day together. And so from the very beginning.
And that first office, where was that? Was there something special about that first office?
That first office was at 35 Hunter, and that was where Jack Taylor's office was for the last part of his career. And Jack Taylor, of course, was the founder of Enterprise Rent-A-Car.
That's amazing. So Chief Operating Officer feels like a fairly new job title, and it can mean different things for different clubs. Before we get into the podcast, I'd love you to sort of explain a little bit about your role so the fans can understand.
Yeah, so it's a very corporate sort of term. Let's break this into two parts. There's the project and then the team, operating team. And so as you know, we're kind of in that, we're on the cusp of going from being a project to going into being an operating team. Up until now, Chief Operating Officer really has been do whatever it takes to get the job done. A lot of that is solving problems and whatever came along in the process of building, you know, starting from nothing to where we are now. When the team goes forward, the Chief Operating Officer will cover kind of all of the operations, things like finance, HR, IT, stadium ops, kind of those kind of boring things that have to happen.
Well, those things definitely haven't been boring over the last few years. You've had some pretty crazy ups and downs, right?
It's been very crazy because a lot of the things, you know, we've just built a lot of those things, but also what's kind of fallen under me. I'm also the general counsel, and so there's a lot of legal work that goes into it, and a lot of the stadium construction has fallen under me up until now as well.
Very exciting. Okay, before we get into the meat of the podcast, we have a very important section. It's called the Quick Fire Questions. Very creative on my part, naming it that. All questions have to be answered fast, and they have to be answered honestly. First question, nice easy one. Softball for you, Jason. Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Coffee?
Coffee. Apologies to the Brits.
I thought we were tea buddies.
Tea
buddies today for the podcast. Where'd you drink your coffee? What's your favorite place to go?
People hate this, but Starbucks Americano.
Starbucks Americano, okay.
Which isn't really even coffee.
Okay, might have to scrub that out, but you're chief legal, so you can say what you like. Favorite St. Louis restaurant?
Dewey's.
Sneakers or shoes?
So I spent 25 years or more wearing dark suits, white shirts, and wingtips or cap toes, sneakers.
Sneakers all the way.
One of the benefits of working for a football club is I can wear sneakers.
And you are a bit of a show pony with the sneakers. You don't hold back.
I try to keep up with the crowd.
Yeah. Cats or dogs?
Neither.
Neither. Brutal. Rock music or rap?
So I'm gonna try to kind of hit both here. Can I say Rage Against the Machine? A little bit of rap in there. Maybe Sublime, a little bit of funk in there. Typically rock, maybe indie rock.
Favorite band?
U2.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
So this is a debate within the club. We have a worker that does not eat sandwiches, and he's telling me that it is a sandwich, but he will eat it. So I'll go with sandwich.
Where did we find somebody that doesn't like sandwiches?
The HR guy.
The HR guy. Okay, well, I shall not critique.
Which at the time was me, but that's okay.
Favorite place to go in St. Louis?
City Park.
City Park. Love City that. Park.
Love it.
Favorite soccer player of all time?
Roy Kent, hands down. He's here. He's here. He's there. He's everywhere.
Apple TV, are you listening? If you were not a chief operating officer or a lawyer, what would you do?
Or a lawyer? It's a great question. I don't have a good. I don't have a fast answer for that one.
Just dedicated to the law and the operations.
It's all I know.
Great. Okay, we're going to move out of that section. Early life. St. Louis loves a good origin story. Where did you grow up?
Iowa. It's a state just north of here.
Great. How was growing up in Iowa?
Good. It's a very wholesome place.
Were you a soccer fan as a youngster?
So I played soccer as a youngster. Now, when I was a youngster, obviously it was pre-MLS, probably even to NASL days. But in the places I grew up, soccer was not a major commercial venture. So I got to say, not a huge fan growing up. But I played. So I was a fan of the game, just not of the professional sport.
And then before you moved to the club, you mentioned that you were a lawyer. Like, what sort of law did you practice, and where did you study?
So first of all, I worked at Thompson Coburn here in St. Louis for over 20 years. I went to the University of Iowa Law School. My specific type of law was essentially tax law, private client, which is trust and estates, but a lot of estate and gift tax. But remember, lawyers are problem solvers. And so the substance of the problem, it doesn't really matter. We solve problems.
Great. And then final question on the early life. How did St. Louis City come into the equation, and what's your relationship been with it?
So when I was at the firm, I had the good fortune of working with many members of the Taylor family, including Andy Taylor. Andy Taylor is a very dynamic individual, and one of the things he started was this project. And in those early meetings, he called me, joined the meeting to talk about starting the project.
How did he pitch that to you? I mean, like, what's that like? You know, you're working on tax, and then all of a sudden this comes on the table? I mean, that must have been a pretty crazy moment.
You know, a client like Andy does a lot of different things, and I was fortunate enough that he included me in many of those things. And so here's how I went. My phone rang, and I answered, and he says, "Why don't you come down to the office this afternoon, and we're going to talk about a new idea." There you go. That was the new idea. Now, keep in mind, there had been other attempts to bring Major League Soccer to St. Louis. And the one just prior to this one, the people who were behind that had talked to him as well. And I was in some of those meetings with him. And so it wasn't a completely new concept. Now, that failed for a lot of reasons, but evidently Andy kept it in the back of his mind and decided in 2018 that the time had come.
So without giving too much away, Andy famously said that he'd never wanted to get into sport. What changed his mind, and what was the thinking behind starting a club from scratch? I mean, it's a pretty difficult project.
Yeah, Pete, as you know, you've heard a million times, and we've said a million times around the city, it's more than just about soccer. And from Andy Taylor's perspective, who, by the way, is not a soccer fan, none of the Taylors really were soccer fans. Carolyn famously bought the book Soccer for Dummies, and she'll proudly tell you that. And so for Andy, it was really about the community and about the region and what a development like this and what we see out here can do for St. Louis and the region.
So on a personal level, what were your thoughts? Like, was there ever a moment of doubt of whether you wanted to jump into this? Was this like a sit down in the garden with a cold beer or a gin and tonic? Did you have to think about it, or were you just like, this sounds cool, let's jump in?
Yeah, you know, keep in mind, it started out as a legal project.
Yeah.
And the project was, of course, trying to get the MLS to award the team, to allow the team to in St. Louis. And as we got through that process, the project got bigger and bigger, and it got to a point where I had to drop out of it and work on all clients, or drop all clients and work on the project. Lawyers don't get to build things very often, and the allure of building something like this for what it represents to the city and the community, that's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And so while it was a difficult decision to leave my practice and leave my clients and leave my firm, it was not hard to do. And now my wife would say something different about the machinations that went on in the gnashing of teeth. But I remember telling her that what I really wanted is to get the project, get the team up and running, be on the pitch that first day, that first game, wind blowing the lanyard, hopefully it's a warm day in March. And that would be kind of the capstone of that project and experience.
What shifted for how you operated? Like, you go from doing something very successfully in law for many years. Like, are there more variables? Did you have to swat up on anything in particular, or did it, because you've been solving problems for so many years, does the chief operating officer role come naturally?
No, because it's completely unexpected. It's a startup, and every day you walk in and you don't know what you're going to get. And just today in the office, we're talking to some coworkers about how can we make the TIFO, which just pure size of it. How do we enable the supporters to do that? But yeah, that's a kind of just a random thing that pops up today. Every day is like that. And it's invigorating, it's exciting. But I remember that first day on January 6th in 2020, walking in the office of six other people, and we all kind of looked at each other like, now what? Because really nobody had ever done this before. And so it's like, okay, here we go.
So what does day one on a brand new project look like? Because there were no guarantees that St. Louis was going to be awarded the franchise. Like, where do you start? What's the first thing that goes down on a piece of paper when thinking about something this big?
Yeah, well, so if you go back to day one, back to, say, the second quarter of 2018 when we started down the path, that piece of paper actually is supplied by the league. And we started the project off by flying up to New York and meeting with Don Garber and others from the league. And it would have been, me and Carolyn, Lee Broughton, Jim Cavanaugh, Andy Taylor, sitting at a table across from Don and a number of other people from the league. And keep in mind, in 2018, we had just come off a failed attempt to bring Major League Soccer here. We had just lost the Rams. And so here we come from St. Louis and saying we want to do this. And we've got a little bit of a look kind of an askance look at us there. But they give you the list. They tell you, here's what you need to do. And I remember maybe the second or third meeting with the league, Andy Taylor looking at Don Garber and saying, we will do this, and we do what we say we're going to do. And I remember thinking, oh, shit, how are we going to do this? And so they kind of give you the list to some degree. And then now we got marching orders.
Do you feel out the enthusiasm from the people over the other side of the table? Like, Don Garber talks very highly of St. Louis as a soccer city. Did you, like, what were the vibes from them? Did they think that you were going to deliver on it? Like, what's the...
I think they were cautiously optimistic. Obviously, St. Louis is a soccer city, and I think this is a powder keg waiting to blow come March of next year, and it'll be amazing. Just all indications of what everything we've done and accomplished so far. And so I think they knew that, and they'd wanted... This is actually the third attempt to bring MLS to St. Louis, and I think they'd long identified... But they couldn't get all the right parts to fit together, and most importantly, the ownership group. And so I think that they were cautiously optimistic, felt good that the ownership group that had been accumulated, but there still is a little bit of, this is the third time, this is Missouri, right? You got to show me.
So did you look at the other bids that had gone in the past? Did you look at like failed bids elsewhere in the league? Like, what was the difference between what you were proposing and maybe things that weren't in previous proposals? And how did you get agreement or a-
Yeah, what you know, I think what the most important thing for this bid and what made it so successful, has made it so successful, is it's 100% local ownership group with a track record of being committed to the community. And I think that is really the differentiating factor with the prior bids. Now, the first bid in 2008 kind of failed when the Great Recession hit. But I think that is really the difference maker. And we didn't really look at bids per se, but we did visit many teams as we were going through the process of making our bid, and just to see what made those other teams successful. So we went places like Kansas City and LAFC, Galaxy, Portland, Orlando. We went to all these different places. To try to learn what made them successful. And so we picked up a lot, and everybody was very helpful. And so, You know, but I think it all goes back to the ownership group, 100% local. They've been here since 1957 when Enterprise, well, before that, Enterprise was started in 1957. But that 100% local caring commitment from the ownership group, I think, is really the key.
And how do you present a proposal? Is it a Word document? Do you get a big PowerPoint slide up? Is it a video? Like, what's the what does that process look like?
So there is an expansion agreement, and it was over 1,000 pages with attachments. So if, you know, first off, you just to kind of walk it back, you have to inform the legal entities about who's going to run the team and the ownership group and all that, the funding sources, and you go through all of those kinds of things. You identify, part of what we had to do was identify, one of the requirements that the league was very, very firm about was we had to have a downtown open air soccer specific grass field stadium. And, that's a little difficult. Now, we got a little bit lucky in the sense that NGA, this land used to be on and off ramps. NGA forced a change in the interchange at Jefferson, which made the on and off ramps unnecessary. And we were able to, by the vast majority of the land we needed for this project right here. And we had to pick up some other properties along the way. But that was like the critical component. Now we had the place downtown like they wanted, and then it was just a matter of building a stadium. But there was a variety of things like that. We had to show support from potential sponsors, show support from governmental entities, state and local. We had to show support through the community as evidence of ticketing prospects. We had to go through all of that, and it was about 1,000 pages. So,
how did it rank in terms of things that you've done in your life, like for pressure? And I mean, there must have been quite a tight deadline to get it done, right?
It wasn't too tight, but it was, it wasn't the most pressure-packed thing I've ever done, I'll say that, but it was also fun. It was a fun thing to do.
You get the call that you've won, Andy does, or somebody does. Like, what's the approach there? Are you sitting in a room when you get the call? Is it an email? Is it a letter? Like, how does that happen?
So officially, the way it happened was at the league's annual meetings in summer of 2019. It was in Orlando, where they always have that same time as the All-Star game. We were in Orlando at the Board of Governors meeting when I think the official vote took place. Now, it wasn't officially announced, I think, until August 20th, 2019. But we were in the room for that. Wasn't completely a surprise because the hard work had been done. But it was a celebratory moment, no doubt.
And did the league give you a bit of insight as to what they thought was strong about the bid? What stood you out?
Again, I'm going to fall back on the ownership group. I think that really was a differentiator. And if you look around the league, probably the strongest teams have the best ownership groups. And so, plus you factor that with St. Louis being a soccer town, they didn't give us a criteria, but I truly think it was the ownership group.
Fantastic. Okay, we are on the land that was an off ramp. Yep. We can see the beautiful City Park Stadium in the background, the green grass. This project was a monster. We built the stadium. Let's talk about the biggest problem that hit the world as we were expanding. Like, talk to us about the stadium project and the global pandemic.
Yeah, so keep in mind, we like I said, we started January 6, 2020. The six of us walked into an office, and then eight, 9 weeks later, we all had to go home. And so, we had, at that time, 6 or 7 employees. So we essentially built, the entire team during a pandemic. We hired over 100 people through Zoom. And that's, very, just from a our side of it, set aside the construction for the moment, it's very challenging to build that scope that quickly and do it and try to build culture. And it was impossible. And so when we were able to finally go into the office, we hired incredibly talented, motivated, and competent people. They couldn't wait to go back in. But that was a challenge to try to do everything we had to do throughout 2020, from Zoom, and it was a challenge.
What, from a construction perspective, like rules weren't written. You know, there weren't laws in place. Like social distancing had barely come into play. How did you manage the processes of the build?
Yeah, we got a little lucky in the sense that when the pandemic kind of really hit, we were still in kind of the big construction phase, the excavation and steel and all that, where you're not really tight, as opposed to when the building is done and it's all a lot of internal work. By the time that happened, we'd had vaccinations and all, you know, still masking for the most part, but it was challenging. We had some, you know, blips along the way where a team of steel workers or whatever who worked together closely, one would get COVID, they all got COVID, and that there would be an issue of trying to find replacement workers. And we had a lot of those bumps along the way, but the construction team did a phenomenal job of working through it. And we also got a little lucky that we started really before the pandemic, and so it didn't really hit us as hard as some of the other construction projects around town. But it was still something to work through.
You can't build a new kitchen without having a surprise issue that blows your mind. You must have had 1,000. What was the craziest issue that fans might not know that happened during the construction?
Yeah, I don't think we've fully publicized. I think it's out there, but we've not fully publicized it yet, told the full story. When I say publicized, I mean told the full story. But relatively early in the project, there was some excavation. We didn't excavate a lot. We used the topography by and large that was there. There was some excavation and hit through what's called a karst rock formation. And the water table in downtown St. Louis is actually very high. And we punctured through this rock formation and water came out in kind of an artesian spring, 82 gallons a minute.
82 gallons a minute.
82 gallons a minute, nonstop. That was a pretty serious problem because it sits under the seating. And so that required engineering and construction to figure out a way to get the water out and ultimately into MSD, the local sewer district, with some treatment, pollution treatment to it, because the groundwater does have a slight amount of pollutants in it. But that was a bit of a shock. And that to make things worse, about a year ago, that 82 gallons a minute started climbing until it got to several hundred gallons a minute, which exceeded the capacity of the system we had built. Ultimately, we figured out, and we didn't know where it was coming from. And so we didn't know if we had to tear up part of the stadium to redesign the system and what that would have meant from a time frame perspective. Ultimately, we figured out it was a broken water main, which happens, you know, periodically in all cities. But if it happened once, it could happen again. And so we had to find another solution, and ultimately we did. But that was a dark day when we found out I think it got up to 900 gallons a minute before we figured out it was a water main and got that fixed.
How do you sleep?
Not well. Not well. And then, of course, we had this little electrical problem here in September, but that was also a little bit of a unpleasant surprise.
Well, so your first appearance on the City app was talking about the electrical problem. It has been solved. I mean, I don't think we've spoken since after the Bayer game. Like, how did everything go? Is the system robust? Do you feel confident about it next season?
It's perfectly fine. There's a temporary fix in place. The problem now we're caught in the COVID supply chain issues where the parts to fix permanently the damage to the stadium, it's going to take some time to get all the parts in and rebuild it. And of course, it's a substation, the stadium that was basically built there, and then the walls were put around it. Now we got the walls there, and so it's a much more of a complicated process. But the temporary system, which is in place, is 100% fine, and there'll be no issues with the power. And then when all the parts come in, we'll go back to the permanent solution in the stadium itself.
Which problem were you less confident about solving? Or was there a problem that came up and you were like, whoa, this is tough.
Yeah. The spring was probably less confident about that one just because of the scope of what had to be done. The electrical problem, that was just a matter of time, which of course at that time we didn't really have because we wanted to have the BO4 game and have other events in the stadium. And because of the time frames involved in some of the parts that are required, it could have impacted next season. But again, the construction team did a great job and came up with a temporary solution that'll be just fine until we get the permanent fix.
One of the questions that some fans have had is, when our first problem came up, which was kind of the first public problem that was going to affect anything, it was it was the electrical issue. One of the problems that I think a lot of fans were anticipating was supply chain problems, or like rising costs. How did City manage to get so far along the lines, well, almost to the end of the project, the stadium built, without having any major supply chain issues when literally every company in the world was affected by them?
Yeah, you know, again, we started the project in the buy and all that really happened early in. I mean, the supply chain issues, as far as the pandemic was concerned, it didn't start in, you know, March of 2020. The supply chain issues came later. And so we were able to, you know, purchase steel and purchase things really before the supply chain issues, you know, became a real problem. We did have issues late, but the bulk of it was ordered and everything was bought beforehand. So that we got, again, a little lucky on that one. And the things that did hit, we were able to find an alternate provider or provide, you know, ship things, you know, by air or something along, you know, along. We found ways around a lot of it, and then the construction team found ways around a lot of it. And so it wasn't as big a problem, depending. And again, these other ones probably started just later than we did.
Every agreement that happens at the club will pass your desk at some point, either run.
That is the hope.
Yeah. either through a run through or for a signature. We weren't called City Park throughout our entire history. There was a different name.
Yes.
Yep. Talk to us about like that issue or that challenge when that came up. Like it was a bit of a jolt to the system. Like, how did that come about and how was it resolved?
Yeah, so keep in mind the sources of revenue for a Major League Soccer team are sponsorship, tickets, merch, concessions, things like that. And in the sponsorship bucket, your stadium naming rights is probably your one, if not the biggest, one of the two biggest sponsorship deals you have. And so it's a significant source of revenue. As you know, the Centene Corporation has undergone some changes in the last year or so and refocused their efforts and in what they're trying to do. And was it a shock and a surprise? Yes, absolutely, that we'd gotten this deal done and they were going to be a great partner. And we understand where they're trying to go. But it was a bit of a surprise to have to kind of reorient after that came up. Again, that's one of those moments where it was a difficult day.
I think I'd like to talk about community because community is something that's important to you. Like you've got I work with Jason on a daily basis. Like he's a man of high morals and standards, and I know community is an important part to you. Like you have had a direct role in impacting the communities around here, and there was incredibly high expectations of what the club was going to do. And I think at the start when I joined the club, a lot of the new fans that I'd met were saying, we're watching you for the promises that you've kept. Was community something that drew you to this role in particular? And what does community mean to you in your role as chief operating officer?
Yeah, so to answer your first question, if it weren't for the community focus and aspect of this project and what the Taylor family is trying to accomplish with the team, I probably would still be in private practice, to be perfectly honest with you. It's really that fundamental and that core to what we're trying to do. And it really fits right in the mission of the Taylor family. They're very charitably inclined. They've done a lot for the city of St. Louis, for the region. And from day one, that was one of the primary goals. We've said it, as I told you, we've said it many times. It's more than just about soccer. And what the pandemic did provide for us, because we came into the league, we were supposed to start in 2022, that got pushed back to 2023. But what that provided for us was really another year of breathing room to try to really nail our brand and with people like you and your team. And part of that brand is also the community aspects of it. And I think most, if not all the people that we have, that was part of the draw to come to the team is that community aspect to it. And so what that means from a place like St. Louis is to try to use this 34 acres or so to revitalize downtown West. And that means everything from, you know, this training facility that we're sitting in, we'll have six teams that train out of it, you know, the City 2 and 4 Academy. There will be foot traffic down here virtually every day of the year. We have a pavilion with a coffee shop in it that will, you know, hopefully cater to some of the parents and cater to the neighborhood. We want to have over 200 events in the stadium in and around the stadium over every year. Everything from BizDash we had earlier this year, obviously 17 MLS home games, friendlies, Leagues Cup, all of those things, holiday parties, weddings, bar mitzvahs, you name it. Everything, bring people downtown. We hope that that provides some synergy for people around us to start developing downtown West, maybe turn this into a walkable neighborhood. And already we are seeing signs of some things. I'm looking at Maggie O'Brien's right there. They've painted the outside. They've fixed up the inside across the street in Union Station. The Pitch Tavern and Athletic Club, I think, a soccer-themed bar is going to open up soon. Butler Brothers Building, its entire city block's been empty for 40 years. That's been purchased in the process of rehabbing with 380 or so new residential units. That doesn't happen. I've talked to the president of the company that bought it. That doesn't happen without this development. And those are just a few things. That's exactly what we're trying to do. But what that also does is that will generate sales tax, that will generate earnings tax, that will generate more real estate tax. The city could use the resources to provide the services it needs to provide. And so these things are just absolutely critical for what we're trying to do. This soccer team is a tremendous amenity that we hope to use to help attract businesses to St. Louis. And just think about National Geospatial, what, a half mile north of here, and maybe leverage off that and try to attract geospatial tech-based businesses. And this isn't a tremendous amenity. The demographic of the soccer fan is much more diverse and much younger than other sports teams. Perfect for the types of people that work for tech companies. It's all that synergy and everything that, we're all trying to ladder up to the broader economic development. And that's the kind of thing that I find exciting about that. We haven't even talked about other community sorts of things that we're doing with kids and other areas.
So does economic development can sometimes seem like a bit of a cold term that's so loose it's difficult to directly define. Does the Taylor family, are they looking to highlight downtown as part of the broader St. Louis conversation? Like, is the success of the club closely entwined with how much the area around it builds up? And is that something that the ownership group is measuring?
Well, to answer your question, I think the view is that soccer is the lens through which we're looking at the economic development. And so the success of the club, the on-pitch success, obviously generates excitement and generates a lot of eyeballs and people interest. And so to the extent that that helps bring people down here, focus, look at downtown, come downtown, absolutely that's an important part of what we're doing. From a measurement perspective, a lot of these things are not within our control. I mean, you will eventually see, hopefully, increased tax revenues for the city. Hopefully we'll see better streets. Hopefully we'll see better security and some of these intangibles that come off of it. From our perspective, it's hard to measure, but we need to measure these things, and we will, through our community programs, we'll find ways to measure these things and show the impact we're making, because it's critically important.
Breaking the pay-to-play model in St. Louis has also been a big part of the sporting initiative. Do you think the very visual community efforts like the City Futures program, do you think that they're important to the success of the club and how it's perceived in the area beyond just winning trophies or making the playoffs?
You referenced City Futures, and I don't know if you've had a podcast on that yet, but so City Futures, as you know, and you can explain better than I can, is really going to five satellite locations in parts of the city that maybe where we're trying to go to the kids. And as you know, if some of those kids get into the academy programs, which is not a pay-to-play. And in those academy programs, if 2-4% go pro, that's a win, right? A huge win. That means that you got 98-96% of the kids in the academy program don't go pro, don't play professional soccer. The kids in the City Futures, only a handful of them will probably go to the academy. And so what we're trying to do is, through the lens of soccer, make a difference in these kids' lives. And there's a variety of ways that we're working on that. But that's very critical. That's a very long-term fundamental approach to impacting a community through the lens of soccer and teaching life skills to these kids in the academy and the City Futures program. That's absolutely non-negotiable. That has to happen.
Your job is, in the past, it has been in the legal world. cases of right and wrong and trying to suss out like who sits where. Soccer has had an interesting relationship with right and wrong over the last decade, like globally. Reputation is incredibly important to the Taylor family. Like if you work for Enterprise, you learn that very early on. You work for the soccer club, you learn about that very early on. How important is the way the club operates and the perception of how it operates to your role?
So just to go back to what you said, the reputation is the most critical thing, the most important thing to the Taylor family. And that is the one thing that can never be compromised. And yes, we all learn that. And when you start an enterprise, you learn that early on and you kind of come through the system. With the club, you know, a lot of people have been hired from all around really the world. And so, you know, getting that message through about the importance of reputation is critical. And so from a legal perspective, you know, most people won't agree with this, but there's a strong sense of ethics in a legal profession, much, much more so, and imposed upon you by the Bar Association. And so, you know, that strong sense of ethics, obviously I didn't leave at the firm when I joined the club. And given the fact that I've worked with the family for over 20 years, that attention to reputation obviously came with me as well. The, you know, soccer or football does have a bit of a checkered history all the way to the top with FIFA. Given the value that the family places on reputation and what we're trying to do in the community and what we've put ourselves out there to be, we have a zero tolerance policy for cheating. No cheating, however big, however small. And while there are gray areas at times, and that's fine, lawyers live for the gray areas. When it's not gray, it is our job at the club to make sure we're always on the right side of the line. And you know, I've said it, and this is me saying it, and I've never heard a Taylor say this, but I would say that the Taylors would rather lose the right way than win the wrong way. And I think that's critically important. Wins come and go, players come and go, coaches come and go, the reputation stays. And what we're trying to accomplish has to be consistent.
Do you think that is kind of a St. Louis mentality in general? I mean, I've only been here for 18 months, but that mindset is something that I've heard outside of soccer. You know, St. Louis is a place that likes to do things the right way and likes its teams to do things the right way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that St. Louis is a good mist. St. Louis is kind of a funny place. It's in the Midwest, but it's kind of on the border of the North and the South and the East and the West. But it's a good Midwestern city, and I think Midwestern sensibilities. And I'm not saying that doesn't occur on the West or the East Coast, but I think certainly that is something that the St. Louis would define themselves by is that sense of values.
One of the questions that sometimes pops up is, you know, what is the thinking behind getting into sport? And is the ownership group just in this to make a tidy profit every year?
You know, I don't want to speak for the ownership group on that one. Obviously, if the project paid for itself, that would be a huge win. This is a very heavy investment that the family's made in downtown St. Louis. And I think the measurement of success from a return perspective is going to be largely in the community development and the economic development and what impact it has on the city. You know, again, winning and losing comes and goes. That's just part of sports. But the long-term win in what the team can accomplish for the city and for the region is really how we measure success. Now, with that said, we will field a winner. And we will be competitive and we will compete for cups, MLS Cup, Leagues Cup, you name it.
So bigger than soccer really does run through like the whole purpose of this. It's not just something we say. It's like bigger than soccer. The success is what happens downtown. Sporting, obviously, yeah. Incredibly important, but like it's not just, that's not the only thing people are looking at. And
We hope not. We hope that's not, you know as well as I know because you know, we work together every day. We overthink everything and everything. You know, we have five pillars that we've come up with and I try to tell people, view every decision through those five pillars and view every decision, how it impacts the community. Obviously, as we transition from a project to a sports team and the regular rotation of off-season, season, postseason, and so forth, soccer has and will and should be the focus by and large on a day-to-day basis. But big picture, the success has to be measured by the impact that we make on the community.
So what is, so success for the ownership group is on the pitch combined with community, yep, equal importance there. What does success look like for you personally after the first season?
What I would hope to see after the first season, this is probably just me, again, just me talking. I would hope that we have a successful on the pitch first season. Now, how we measure that, I don't know that we can realistically hope to be in the MLS Cup. If it happens, fantastic. But a solid season on the pitch, building for long-term success from a sporting perspective. But I think really what we'd like to see, what I'd like to see, you know, sports is all about tribalism. And I'd like to see a really good start to the formation of that tribe. Sports, for better or worse, has a unique way of gathering people for a singular purpose. Our purpose is more than just sports. It's about St. Louis and about the region. Let's build our tribe for sports and St. Louis and the region. And I want to see, in St. Louis, you're relatively new to the area, you've probably noticed a somewhat divisive area politically, the way we structure the local governments, you name it. This is one thing we can all rally around. I mean, sports has that uncanny ability always. This we hope goes deeper. And if we can make solid inroads in that first year, I think that'll be a success.
One last question. So a lot of people want to get into soccer. They want to get into sport. And it's a bit opaque how to get in. What would you say, having worked with lots of different departments, what would you say are the core attributes that make you right for soccer? And would you give any advice to anybody in any field looking to get into the game? Would you give them any advice on how to think about that?
Yeah, I'm probably not the right person to answer that question because I didn't get into it because of the sports and I'm not in it because of the sports. But some people clearly just love the excitement of sports and being, in the camera, so to speak, and in the media. I mean, look, sports, this team from a public facing perspective has a far bigger presence based upon its, sort of balance sheet compared to a lot of other just regular businesses and companies. And people like that. And that's fine. But I guess I would say that, that kind of thing comes and goes. And, make sure that you're kind of true to what you're trying to do. And hopefully it's more than just sports. I don't think that's a great answer, but
it works. You're in sports. Jason, thank you so much for coming on and being so open and honest with your answers. I think the fans are going to love that. And if you are listening to this podcast on Apple or Spotify, jump in, give us a 5-star review. You can even write a review on iTunes and say that you love listening to the Jason podcast and you want him to come back next season when things are up and running. And on that note, Jason, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Pete.
Speak to you soon.